Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We will have Peter King with us today, the Monday morning quarterback. Peter King, SI.com senior NFL writer, catching up with Peter. Tyrann Mathieu closing in on a contract extension. This is not a surprise. Maybe the size of it is. And Peter spoke with Dwight Freeney over the weekend. How much of a conversation around the Cardinals did Peter and Dwight have? That's coming up on the show with Peter King. Looking forward to that. I'm going to talk to him about Vegas and the Raiders as well. I think there's some news and notes on that front. Paula Bovin is with us. It is Monday. AZ Central sports columnist Paula Bovin with us every week. Always good to catch up with Paula. She had breakfast today, Eric. Is this right? She had breakfast with the new wonder kid of the Coyotes, their new GM. Is that?
Yeah, I don't know if they had breakfast or just met or had coffee. I don't know.
All right. Well, and who bought? That's what I want to know on that one. You know, if he's the new GM, I would think that he's the guy that would pick up the check. At least I would hope so. So
I don't know what they ate. I don't know where they went. I just know they met.
You just know they met.
That's all I know.
I was with the president of a bank this morning. He picked up the check. Of course, all I had was oatmeal and a cup of coffee, but it's still very nice of him to do that. Appreciate that. Was at the busy weekend. Busy weekend. The baseball brawl happened while I was at the Diamondbacks game yesterday. My phone started to vibrate, went over to social media, sitting there in the stands looking down at my phone. I'm sure you all saw what happened in Boston over the weekend where a fan took a bat. You know, you can't be looking at your phone, but there was a foul ball that almost nailed us, almost got us. The fight yesterday, so let's go back on this a little bit, because there's some stuff around the Cardinals, obviously, in the NBA playoffs and all that, but I think the fight, to me, is the most compelling of everything that happened over the weekend. So it was Texas and Toronto. And the backstory on this and why you should care about this is there is this old adage of payback. And I think when you take a big, long look at this, I'll give you my spin on it in a minute, and I'll be interested to hear where you stand on this. You can always reach me on Twitter, @BradSussMatt, and I'm on Facebook as well, and email brad@sports360az.com. Jose Bautista did the bat flip last October for Toronto, so you have to know the backstory and why there's this bad blood. Texas looked like they were going to eliminate Toronto. Elvis Andrews had three errors in one inning. Everything falls apart. Bautista hits one a country mile, and he throws his bat around the world, just flips it in the air, and Texas goes crazy about it. Of course, in Toronto, they loved every minute of it last year. This was last October. So Texas and Toronto have played one another six times before yesterday's game this year. No retaliation, nothing had happened. This yesterday was the last time these two teams would meet for the year. The year. Matt Bush is on the mound pitching for Texas. Matt just got out of prison. He was at a halfway house 6 months ago, prison before that. This was a former number one pick, but he throws stuff at 97 miles per hour. Like, you can't script everything behind this. So it leads to Bautista getting hit in the ribs, squarely in the ribs, by Matt Bush. Now, if you want to send a message, you don't want to hit somebody. You don't want to throw at someone's head, right? You want to plunk him right in the rib cage, and that's what he did. So Bautista goes to first base. This, again, goes back to, was this ordered or not by the Rangers? Do they tell Matt Bush, hey, by the way, thanks for coming up, and your first order of business is going to be to drill Bautista? So that leads to the play, and we have some video of the play, of where it all comes down. And the slide by Bautista was so late. It was so late. And Bautista gets up. Do we have the video? Go for it. There he goes. So it's so late. And then this is where the hit comes on Bautista. The hit where he was out on his feet, Eric. Don't you think that one punch? Like, one of the more interesting moves on all this from a media standpoint yesterday was ESPN putting Teddy Atlas on to analyze the punch.
It's just so stupid. Like, really? I mean, there's so many great stories telling sports, and not that this isn't a big deal, because it is a big deal. It's actually a baseball fight where there was actually a real fight where a punch was landed.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's okay.
You sound disgusted by this.
Well, it's just...
This is boys being boys, right? This is what sports is all about.
But it's so sensationalized. It's so sensationalized.
It's the fact that he connected on the punch.
Correct.
Right?
If he didn't connect on the punch, it would just be another baseball fight.
Another pushing and shoving.
I mean,
and
think about it, Brad. They have how many baseball fights are there a year? Maybe a 10, 8? And only when it's extreme and something drastic like Odor's punch actually landing completely blows the story into a big deal.
Yeah. I would disagree with you because if you look at what happened, the backstory was the Batista bat flip. This all started over somebody flipping their bat in the air, which if you're a Blue Jays fan, you love it. If you're Bryce Harper, you probably love this. That's what he's pushing for. If you're the Texas Rangers, get him out. Okay? You didn't get him out. And fans in this day and age like to see celebration. Millennials like to see celebration. They don't want everything to be the same as is.
But isn't that where baseball is in a no-win situation? They want the dramatic. They want the flair. But then when you have the dramatic and the flair and the exaggeration, you get stuff like this.
But how often do you get this stuff? You don't get this stuff. We haven't seen this. We have not seen this type of stuff. It's kind of like, remember when the Suns brawled with the Knicks and Charles jumped up on the table in New York City years and years ago? And this big, massive brawl. We don't see that very often. So it uncorks. I would disagree with you that baseball has a problem here, that this is the only time people are talking about it. In Arizona, because our team stinks, okay? Our team is in last place today. They're 5 games out. And they can turn it around just as quick. What was it, 2 weeks ago, they swept the Giants. Last week, they were coming off a road trip where they won 5 of 6. Everything was great. Now our team is off the radar again, okay? If you're in St. Louis today, if you're in Boston today, if you're in baseball cities where the teams have been, if you're in Pittsburgh today where the team's been good here, if you're in Chicago today with the Cubs and the White Sox, you don't really care about this. It's entertaining. But baseball doesn't have a perception problem. In markets like ours where the team isn't good, we'd like to talk about, hey, the Diamondbacks actually split a 4-game series. But instead, a punch, what leaves a guy just kind of staggered. And I don't know, Eric, Jose Bautista is not the most well-liked guy.
Oh, no.
No,
I mean, I thought the most amusing part of the whole thing, Brad, was during the fight when the Ranger fans start chanting USA, USA, USA. I mean, it's funny. Like, that to me is humorous. It's good. It's a good baseball fight. But it's not, you know, when a guy runs out to the mound with a bat, then I'm like, wow, this is really intriguing. This is a guy, there's a history there.
Oh, sure. Now you want to see him with a bat.
Well, of course. You know why? Because everything has to be blown up and exposed and over-exaggerated, like this story was last night on SportsCenter, where they wouldn't stop talking about it.
Okay, but we're talking contextually here, that this was a story over the weekend that got a lot of eyeballs. It's a superstar player. Okay, there's bad blood from last year.
Yep.
This all stemmed from, where do you come down on flipping a bat? If you come down on flipping a bat is a great thing, then you better expect, like, I had no problem with Matt Bush drilling him in the ribs. I had a real problem with the Rangers on this one. The Rangers on this one, it's, okay, this happened last October, and you guys have played each other 6 times, and this is going to be the last meeting of the season, and it's a one-run game, and this is the point where you decide to retaliate. A one-run game.
But that's baseball, isn't it?
But do you get it out of the way?
It's not that they have a long memory because this just happened, but it was so scripted, and like you said, it was the last series, the last at-bat. Yeah, you would probably think maybe you'd plunk him during his first at-bat
first
of at the season.
First at-bat. Let's get it out of the way. Get it out of the way. You're right. I love, and we don't have this, nor do we need it, but the Blue Jays reliever, Jesse Chavez, comes out the next inning, and his first pitch, he throws at Prince Fielder, and before it even hits Prince Fielder, he's walking to the dugout.
Oh, yeah, you knew that was coming.
Because he knows he's going to get thrown out. I love that part of the story. Like, there's so many layers on this, and the suspensions, we have Pedro Gomez with us every week. Okay, so Pedro's with us, ESPN's baseball analyst, Valley resident, great guy. Every week for the last 4 years, Pedro comes on and talks baseball. When we have Pedro's segment, I actually called Eric this morning and said, I think we should move Pedro up. But, you know, when the suspension comes down on this.
And we're having Luis Gonzalez on the show tomorrow, and he will have a great
sure
take
he
on
will.
This. Former player, old school guy. He's been in his fair share of melees.
Sure he will. Sure he will. But Batista sliding in hard on Odor, okay? It looked like Odor was trying to throw the baseball at his head when he was sliding from one angle. And I don't know that. We have not heard from Odor as of yet.
Dirty slide?
Yeah, to me, he's
only
on top
because,
of the...
Well, and only because he slid so late.
He slid so late.
It was, he didn't slide out of the baseline, but he was about a foot and a half
a foot.
From the bag.
Easy.
And his spikes were down, in fairness, Batista.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, he now, was doing a little bit more than just trying to break up a double play.
Now,
there.
Batista said it was cowardly. I would go back on the pitch. Okay, the pitch, in my mind, yes, I would agree with him. What happened at second base... Dude, that's your problem. You're bigger than Odor, and you walked up to him, and Odor just said, no, I'm not having any part of this, and laid him out. John Gibbons, the manager of the Blue Jays, he's going to get suspended for a long time because he was thrown out of the game earlier, and he came back out on the field. He was in his office.
You think Batista knew, Brad, when he was coming up in his last at-bat, they might get plunked? Do you think that—
Maybe,
because they've
but
played
it's a
all these
game.
Games. I know. That's, I guess, the beauty of this.
It's a one-run game. So I feel like the punishment, look, Batista's going to get several games. What will be interesting is what does Odor get on this?
He has to get several games,
He's going to get several games, but I mean, are we talking, will Major League Baseball come down and say more games for him because he connected on the punch, where it looked to me like Batista was the one, and it didn't look to me, Batista's the one that instigated the whole thing. So that story clearly is on my mind, and I ran long here because I wanted to get into the Cardinals and this Tyrann Mathieu extension. We'll talk about that next with Peter King. Best in the business, SI.com senior NFL writer, the MMQB. Peter King scheduled to join us next. Sports360AZ.com. We port with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Peter King scheduled to join us here momentarily. So Darren Revelle, on the business side of things in sports, this always catches my attention. And I think a lot of people nationally this morning, this story breaks. And Darren had tweeted out last night that there were a couple of major business of sports stories that were coming, and one of them did get released this morning. And this impacts you. This impacts you. We've heard through the years about how the fan experience at going to sporting events has become one of the biggest challenges out there. So Atlanta has decided to be the one that really stepped forward and says, we're making some changes. So the Atlanta Falcons, of all teams, announced this morning that their new stadium, Mercedes-Benz Stadium next year, that they are going to slash every last bit of their concession prices to become the lowest in all of sports, not just the NFL, but in all sports. And it's going to change. And in my view, it's what will happen to those other teams within the National Football League. So a bottomless soda, which will come with free and unlimited refills, will cost $2 at an Atlanta Falcons game. $2. The same cost as a bottle of water, popcorn, and a pretzel, $2. A slice of pizza, peanuts, and fries will be $3. Cheeseburger costs $5, chicken tenders in a basket $6. Now, I don't go to the games that much because I'm usually in the press box working, but when I have gone, you always hear people complain about a few things when they go to games. If the team's not good, they complain about the cost to park, and they complain about the cost of concessions and all that stuff. And there's this team index every year that comes out that has the lowest prices in all sports. It's pretty hard to argue with anything the Atlanta Falcons are doing here. A 12-ounce Bud Light is going to be $5. And I don't know what the Cardinals are going to do here. I heard they're just going through another round with their concessionaire last week on the business side here locally. And I've always been of the opinion that when the team is good, the beer is really, it's not that bad. $12, not that bad. And the peanuts being 10, and it's not that bad. And the soda being $10 and water and this and that. When the team is good, the cheerleaders are red hot. And the food is not bad and the parking is great. When a team stinks, when a team struggles, man, it's hot in this stadium, or the parking is way too much, or the cost of this is outrageous and the cost of that is outrageous. Winning is a cure-all for most everything. And so the Falcons CEO comes out this morning and says, you'll be able to feed a family of four at our games for $27. $27. That's 60 to 70% cheaper than our competitors. Now, I don't know if this is being aimed towards the Braves and their new stadium. This is being aimed towards the Hawks and what they're trying to do in Atlanta. Or if this is the rest of the National Football League, it only takes one to break away. It only takes one to break away. And if you can do it in Atlanta, then you can do it in other stadiums, you would think. So on the business side, that's an interesting story that caught my eye from this morning.
You think they're trying to fool us in Atlanta?
What do you mean?
You think they're making the tickets more expensive?
Well, I'm sure they are.
Or are those little hidden fees that we don't see?
PSLs like
the,
like
the,
and
well,
that.
The great thing is, hey, parking's free. Oh, wow, you can park for free. Yeah, we're just going to put in your ticket price.
Yeah. No, you could look at it that way. But if the team is good, okay, if the Falcons are good, and the Falcons are one of those teams that every year they're just okay or they're a little bit better than good, and then they plunge this last year.
And they usually don't draw great.
No.
I think they draw okay, but not every game is sold out.
No, because that's a college football environment.
Yep.
There.
Yep.
I mean, that college football is the first point of emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that caught my eye. In terms of the Cardinals, so Ian Rappaport reported this morning the Cardinals are deep in negotiations with Tyrann Mathieu to make him among the highest paid players in the league. The easy and early reaction on this is, yeah, and he's come off of all these knee issues, knee problems, and you can have any knee doctor say, oh, he's going to be fine, and you just don't know. So there's got to be some back and forth on the incentive side of this. I made this comment to Kent Summers last time I had him in studio from AZ Central, and that is Tyrann Mathieu is approaching. He's not there yet. He is approaching the popularity of Larry Fitzgerald. And I've actually had some business guys in town that do business that is directly related to the Cardinals' success or lack thereof, and most recently the success, that Tyrann Mathieu is more popular than anybody. Now, I don't know that. I think Fitz is in a level on his own. But you have to have that succession. You have to have that guy or guys. And clearly, once Carson and Larry walk away, now Larry got his degree over the weekend, I saw, good for him. And Carson walk away, Tyron's going to be that guy. There's something that everybody likes about Tyrann Mathieu, that he's got that edge about him, that he's got that that grit about him. And he's somebody that obviously you root for to have success. I've been rooting for Tyrann Mathieu all the way back. From before the draft, before the Cardinals even took him. It was one of those guys that you saw his backstory. And he said, how can you not root for this guy? So there's that about Tyrann Mathieu. How far negotiations? They have OTAs starting tomorrow. We'll be out there tomorrow. Do you get this deal wrapped up before summer starts? The Cardinals have done, in my opinion, a very good job here in recent years of extending guys, which sends the message, we will take care of our own. Not every organization likes to do that. We haven't seen a situation here where you look at and say, they really didn't handle this guy the right way. Even with his surgeries, it says an awful lot that they've gone down this road. They're willing to pay him so much. So I'm good on that. The other side, we're chasing Peter right now, but on the other side with Peter, he spoke with Dwight Freeney over the weekend. And Dwight Freeney said, quote, my first allegiance is Arizona. Peter floated the story by him. What if Bill Belichick called, since he's back there? And Freeney said, my first allegiance is Arizona. But there's no question with Chandler Jones coming here and what the Cardinals did in the draft with Kimdiche that they're trying to get younger up front. And maybe this isn't the fit long term. And how many more years is long term for Dwight Freeney? The Cardinals have done a terrific job here in recent years of handling their contracts. They don't have a contract that you look at and say, wow, what are they going to do with this guy? I mean, there's guys that you look at and say, where's Andre Ellington fit in this long term with his inability to be on the field? Has Michael Floyd really developed himself into a player? You can always go up and down any NFL roster and look at it from that standpoint. Me, this Mathieu deal and what they do with Dwight Freeney, more about Mathieu. It just says it sends the right message to the rest of the organization. and the direction they're going to go on that front. Paula Bovin's going to join us here in a few minutes, and then we'll try to circle back on Peter. We'll step aside here, have much more on the other side, news and notes with Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports columnist, and then if Peter jumps in, working on a story, I'm sure, that's next. Stay with us, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central Sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sismat.
Every Monday, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist Paula Bovin, my friend who I understand you had breakfast this morning with the newest executive in the Valley landscape. And why don't you just tell me, was this a good, productive breakfast? Who are you with? Let the cat out of the bag here.
So I met with John Chyka, who is the, wonderkind new GM of the Coyotes, and we just met at a Starbucks. But I was really interested to meet him in person, Brad, because it feels kind of crazy what the Coyotes did. And what I walked away feeling was, goodness, this guy is really impressive. That was my gut reaction after spending 40 minutes with him.
So he's the wonder kid because he's what, 26, right?
He's 26. Yep. And was an assistant GM with the Coyotes for a year, but there's a lot of people in the NHL, behind the scenes that have kind of raised their eyebrows. Why are you hiring somebody this young? And also because hockey, compared to some of the other sports like, Major League Baseball, has been slow at sort of embracing analytics and things like that. So there were a lot of sort of questions about it, but you sort of get why they hired him after spending a little time with him. I mean, there's definitely an old school brand or group of people who have trouble with metrics and analytics and using numbers to evaluate talent. But for him, it's kind of a way to start a conversation, I think, with other people at the Coyotes. And he's such a sort of engaging people person. You could see why people would respond to him and react to him. So I'm actually really intrigued with this hire. And I was just thinking how it's sort of kind of different of, what the Diamondbacks have done lately with having older guys sort of in their organization making decisions, whether it's the Tony La Russa and Dave Stewart and things like that. And I don't know. I think it's just going to be an interesting thing to watch unfold here in the next year or two.
Well, if you look at the analytics side of it, you can even go back to Josh Burns when he was at the Diamondbacks. And Ryan McDonough, I think that there's a certain amount of that with the Suns. We've seen how that's worked out to this point. I'm not going to throw it all on Ryan. I think it's a collective failure over there to this point.
Of course, yes.
But in the Coyotes' case, they've got to figure out that move that, from a fan standpoint, it's pretty simple. You got to get fans in the seats. It seemed like they were heading the right direction this past season. Don Maloney moves on. He's an old school guy. This new regime. So when Shane Doan does decide to retire, whenever that does come, does he work his way into it? Is Dave Tippett part of this discussion? I mean, I think there's many layers of the story. It's not just a 26-year-old coming in to run the Coyotes, right?
No, absolutely. There's a lot to the story. And obviously, Tippett, is getting more responsibility. So he's sort of even with, I think, John and kind of how the decision-making is going to go. There's going to be a lot of conversations and things like that. But the bottom line, Brad, too, is they have to start winning games, and they have to start getting into the postseason. Fans in this town need to remember what playoff hockey is like and, re-energize this community again as far as hockey. That's going to be the difference maker. So these guys have to do what they have to do is help this team win. And obviously the other part of the story is they need to figure out the whole where they're going to be playing hockey here in the near future situation. So
I think that's going to be ASU.
It's a bit interesting.
I think it's going to be ASU myself. I think that's where they're going to end up. But what's your call on
that? It sure seems like that's the one that's the most sense. And I think that, privately, that's the one that they feel has the best chance of happening. So we'll see. I don't know.
You made the comment earlier about it'd be nice to see them get back to playoff hockey and all that. I'd like to kind of see, playoff basketball, playoff baseball, just me.
Sure. yeah.
You were down at the ballpark writing a couple of pieces. And one of them I thought was really interesting on Paul Goldschmidt. And I went yesterday, and it feels like they're slipping away one day. The next day, they're slipping further. Then they go win five in a row. Granted, it was against the stinking Braves. But, man, this weekend was just a hard watch, really hard watch. But you think Goldschmidt can pull out of this, huh?
I do. I just, you know, I mean, I tried to talk to enough people where no one thinks it's, you know, there's a physical problem. And so that's good. So if this is a mental thing, if this is a guy who's not used to handling pressure very well, or so, I mean, who knows? It's just so complicated. If it's psychological, I absolutely do believe he'll figure it out. I mean, he's just got the demeanor that it's going to happen. And, you know, I was looking at a lot of really good baseball players over the past decade, and a lot of them have had this kind of a year where it's almost gone like 2 months before they figured it out, you know, from guys like Jeter to Albert Pujols. I mean, they've all had sort of this thing happen to them. So I don't think it's end of the world. So I got to tell you, though, after this series, and I wasn't even feeling the way before this series, after this series, I'm starting to wonder if the team is going to get out of it. Goldschmidt may, but yeah, you know, is the pitching going to improve enough? Is there the leadership that's going to turn things around? I don't know. This series looked really bad to me. So I'm a little more negative on this team than I have been in the past.
No, but here's the follow-up on that. What do they do? You know, to me, to sit here and ponder Chip's future is crazy. It goes back to the revolving door of the organization is part of the at all levels, really. The door is revolved at all levels, other than at Derek's spot and Ken's spot. And those doors aren't going to revolve. And you just can't keep throwing guys out there and revolving them through. They've turned their minor league system upside down on the Shelby Miller trade. That's you can't grab those players back. They turned it upside down last year with some moves. I just don't know what you can do other than if Greinke and Miller and Goldschmidt start doing what they are paid to do and do what they are supposed to do, those three players, then I think they're going to pull out of this because De La Rosa has been better, Paula. He was really good yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he's...
I agree. I mean, I think, you know, if those three things happen, it'll definitely change the, not only the dynamics, but I think they can start winning games. But it's just so weird that it's happening with all these guys. And there's, you know, there's no reasonable explanation that I can come up with. I know a lot of people are pointing fingers at the, it's sort of the leadership there. You mentioned Chip Hale. I find it hard to believe that he's the problem going on here. So I don't know. I think it's just too bad for this organization because they had such an opportunity to grab fans' attention. I mean, you remember what it was like in spring training? People were really excited about this team. And there are fans here who just really want to embrace this team. And it's, you know, it's just too bad that this start has happened. One good thing working for them is that the National League West is just bizarre right now. You know, I mean, that's still an opportunity for them, but it has to happen soon. I just feel like it has to happen soon.
Wow. Listen to you. On May 16th, you're throwing dirt on the grave.
I know.
Cryptic.
I didn't feel that. I told you, it was something about this series. It just felt bad.
Bring in the sledgehammer today. Just to get them out of here. Let's just forget about it. Let's just go to Cardinals and let's just go have a football season. Everything else, forget about it.
They got them. Speaking of Cardinals, they have, I think, one of their, you know, mini camp type things tomorrow morning. That's where I'm headed. that's where it's got my attention right now in May. So,
well, and really, I can't fault you for that. But tomorrow is NBA draft lottery day, and the Suns are sitting there with the fourth pick. They have a 39% chance of moving up beyond the fourth pick and doing something, but it goes to show, I think, even in your space, not being critical here because we're doing the same thing, but it should be about, hey, can they finally figure it out and have two of the top 10 picks? I just don't sense around town that there's enough of a belief in the ownership here and the management here that they're even going to handle it the right way. You can point to Devin Booker all you want, and I'll sit here and say, yeah, okay, Tyson Chandler's contract, PJ Tucker. So I'm the one that's really down on that team. They've got to prove me wrong, and they have yet to even come close to doing it.
No, I mean, I completely agree with you. And here, bottom line, I think they have to earn the fans' respect back. And when you look at this organization, frankly, under Robert Sarver's leadership, and I do believe it, the tide has changed a little bit, but how many times have they gotten in the postseason? And certainly recently, So I understand why fans are skeptical, and I think Suns management has to earn respect back. I feel like things are in a much better place. Really, really interested to see what Ryan McDonough does in this draft. I think this will be a defining draft for him.
Yes, I agree.
You know, don't you agree? Yeah, but I do think it's going to take, you know, a season of much more optimism than we've seen to get fans back on board. So I understand why they're kind of half-hearted about what's going on. But, yeah, it is exciting because of the picks that they have in the draft and the lottery and everything else.
Okay, so one other thing, I'll let you go off this, and that is Ian Rappaport from NFL Media reported this morning the Cardinals are closing in, quote, deep in negotiations to make Tyrann Mathieu among the highest-paid players in the league. It's one of those deals that's really slippery, because if they don't take care of him, they're viewed as, well, what are you guys doing? The other side of it is, in fairness to the Cardinals, the guy has had two knee injuries. So,
right.
I mean, this is a real slippery negotiation, and how much do you tie up in him? I have no question that you tie up a lot. It's just how far does that go from an incentive side of things? Where are you at on Tyrann Mathieu?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question, and I think they're going to err on the side of not caution because of what he has meant to the organization. You know, there is a fan base that adores him, a huge fan base that adores him. He's done so much for the community. He's been such a great representative for this team and for young players coming aboard to kind of follow his path. So I think that if maybe they will overpay him if that is the case. But he's also, yeah, he's had those surgeries, but it doesn't mean he's not going to still be a great player. I understand the concern, but I still think there is a great future ahead of him, and the incentive based part of it is interesting because that, you know, that's always a good way to play it, but it depends what kind of agent you have and what kind of management is willing to go that route and things like that. So I totally get that they're going to throw a lot of money at him, and even if at some point down the road they say, wow, that was too much, I think you have to kind of make that statement with fans.
No, I think the player is in the position of power on this one. Players.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No question.
He can go a lot of different places. I appreciate your time and your insight as always. Thanks.
All right. Good talking to you, Brad.
You too. There's Paula Bovin, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist. Every Monday, we just bounce around things that she sees around the Valley, pro, college, high school, even with Paula. It's good to catch up with her. Peter King, we have been chasing. He has been working on a story, and we will come back with Peter. I do believe that's next. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. Here now is Peter King. He joins us for a couple of minutes. SI.com senior NFL writer, the MMQB, an all-around sports fan. And I want to start there before I get over to Tyrann Mathieu and Dwight Freeney. You spoke with Freeney in your column, but where do you come down on the fight yesterday, Peter? I mean, come on. Do you have Batista? Do you have Odor? Where do you come down on this one, Peter?
I don't. I mean, look. I thought that Batista slid way too hard and way too late. Okay, that is the kind of slide that, without any question, if Odor's leg was stationary there, and he slid into that, he could have ruined him. He could have broken his leg, just like Flores with the Mets last year, or whatever his name was with the Mets. And so the way I sort of looked at that was, you know, there obviously was some bad blood between the two teams. But I have to tell you, Brad, I don't know. I'm a big baseball fan. I don't think I have ever seen in a brawl a punch land like that. There are two amazing things: how amazing the punch itself was, and secondly, that Bautista didn't go down. How's that possible? I mean, you know, that looked like the classic KO punch.
No, you're right, and it goes back, Peter, I think, on the bat flip to last October, obviously. I'm siding with the Blue Jays today for some strange reason on this, because why do the Rangers wait till the last game? They're not going to see each other again in a one-run game with Matt Bush, who just got out of a halfway house in prison. And to me, it was like they ordered him. You got to go hit him. This is our last shot.
Well,
like,
Matt Bush in that particular case, he's going to do whatever he has to do to sort of fit in with the team. So I'm not at all surprised that he did that. And I'm sure anybody on the team would have done that. Any pitcher would have done that. But, I mean, I don't want to say surprise, but the amount of enmity between these two teams was gigantic. I mean, it's almost like, are you telling me all that is over the bat flip? And you know, and again, I still think the dumbest thing in professional sports is the unwritten rules of baseball. I mean, if some of this stuff is so utterly preposterous, I think when you sit down and think about some of the things that happened in baseball that say, you remember Tony La Russa? He did a book a few years ago, Three Nights in August, where I think with Buzz Bissinger.
Yep.
And the book talks so much about all of that, you know, the unwritten rules of baseball. And look, I'm not criticizing the people who sort of carry out the unwritten rules. And I totally understand Tony La Russa having to do all the things that you have to do because that you're in that world. You've got to live in that world. So La Russa is doing what he has to do. All I'm saying is over the years in 1926, when these unwritten rules begin to get invented, somebody please explain to me how it is that what amount of runs is it which make it bad to steal? You know, I've always thought it was hilarious that, you know, somebody's got a 6-1 lead in the seventh inning at Fenway Park, and the team with six steals, and then the next guy gets hit in the rear end. And I'm saying to myself, well, hang on a second. There's 15 runs scored in every game at Fenway Park. Why does this violate the unwritten rule? But I don't know. Some of that stuff in baseball is a riot as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it's kind of like this. Somebody sent me a note last night saying this is like watching Josh Norman and Odell Beckham. And a completely different sport, obviously. And I don't know if you see the comparison at all in this. It's two men going after each other. These are two teams that vehemently hate one another over a guy flipping a bat, which if he gets struck out in October, we don't have this issue, but they didn't strike him out. And Bryce Harper would love to see the bat flip. Jose Bautista, baseball would love to see the bat flip.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, as far as the bat flip goes, I have zero problem with it. It's a guy exulting at maybe the biggest home run hit Toronto since Joe. I'm sure the biggest home run
sure.
hit Toronto since Joe Carter.
Yep.
So, I mean, why? I think, you know, the way that it is permissible to celebrate in sports and the legislated way that you're supposed to celebrate is insane. Mm. And I just am totally not into that at all.
Peter King with us, the Monday Morning Quarterback, SI.com senior NFL writer. Okay, out here, OTAs start for the Cardinals and Tyrann Mathieu deep in negotiations to be among the highest paid in all the game, according to reports. Do you look at the Cardinals as the team that has to do this, given his popularity and the way that he plays the game, even with the knee injuries? Where do you come down on Tyrann Mathieu, Peter?
That is one of those things where I think Steve Keim, you know, and Terry McDonough on the personnel side, and then Bruce Arians sort of on the team side and the locker room side, they see that the reason that Mathieu has such great value to the team is because, you know, everything about the Cardinals says you come in, and if you play hard and do everything right, A, we don't care about your past, mm-hmm. and B, if the doctors tell us you're okay, we don't care about your injury history. And so I sort of look at this and say essentially that Bruce Arians is holding this guy up, rightfully so, as a guy who this is the kind of player who we want. And I think one of the things about Mathieu that has been so important for this organization is that you know, when Todd Bowles began playing guys, you know, when the Darryl Washington thing happened, when they had injuries in the front seven, he said, hey, I'm going to put my best players on the field. And if that means that I get a safety play, an inside linebacker, well, so be it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think what Matthew did is in basically playing either three or four positions, you know, in playing safety, in playing corner, in playing a slot, and in playing inside linebacker, all of which he's played at least a little bit, in playing all of these things, he has helped the Cardinals create their defensive identity. And I have zero problem with it. I mean, I have no idea what the money's going to be. But he clearly has become a signature player, not only for their team, but as it relates to their defense.
When you look around the NFL, is there another player like him?
I would think, you know, I think Jalen Ramsey has a chance to be like him, only I'm waiting to see Jalen Ramsey be as physical as Matthew is. But right now, I mean, the closest guys to Matthew are the guys on his own team, you know, because he's not the only one who, you know, has turned that, you know, sort of that real physical, you know, combination defensive back linebacker thing into a real efficient, smart player on the back end of your defense.
No, it's interesting with Buchanan and Peterson and how that was viewed as a spot of concern. I think some of it has to do, obviously, with Matthew's with knee injury there. You spoke in your column, you wrote, you spoke with Dwight Freeney over the weekend. What's your gut tell you about him coming back here, Peter?
Oh, I think there's no question he wants to come back very, very much. He loves the team. He thinks he fits there very well. But as he said to me, he said, hey, Chandler Jones plays my spot. And they're not going to take him out on obvious passing downs. So I think this is going to be a situation where the Cardinals are going to have to decide whether they can carve out 350 snaps, important snaps, and they're going to be able to keep Freeney fresh. So if you can carve out 20 to 25 snaps a game. The funny thing about Freeney, in looking at how he played last year, almost every game that he played after he got to the team in October, almost every game, if not every one, he played between like 20 and 33 snaps, mm-hmm. something like that. And so he had a very defined role on the team. But again, you know, he knows they're not going to take Chandler Jones out of the game. So I think they're just going to have to see how it works in training camp and whether they think they're going to be able to get enough pressure on the quarterback. I mean, look, honestly, if I were Indianapolis, and I'm not sure New England sees themselves in as needy a position as that, but I mean, if I were a team with a desperate need for a pass rush, Indianapolis, New Orleans, who could basically afford to have a guy on there for 20 to 25 snaps a game and get good rush, because he did a great job last year for what he was asked to do. I'd be really interested in him.
Peter King with us. Before I let you go, the MMQBSI.com senior NFL writer. On the Cardinals front, we've seen Steve Keim roll through last year with Johnson at running back, Freeney on the defensive front. I know we're sitting here in May. This is starting to become that time of year where there's some veteran free agents that are sitting around out there. Given the past, Peter, of what Steve has done here and what Bruce has done here, are we to expect maybe there is some big name or two out there that could come Arizona's way?
Wouldn't surprise me at all. I think one of the things that happens now is that we're seeing a waiting game with teams and with players out there who still want to play and who still could come free. And, you know, like I've always thought, for instance, and this would require a player to get cut, but I've always thought that I still don't know, for instance, if Josh McCown is going to make it to training camp with the Cleveland Browns. I'm not saying that he'd be a guy who the Browns would, or who the Cardinals would want. But the point I'm making is that there are going to be a bunch of people and a bunch of teams who are using the rest of the off-season program to see, for instance, in Cleveland's case, is Robert Griffin III good enough so that we can take a really good backup quarterback and we can let him go so we don't have to, you know, pay him what we were going to pay him this year. So I still think there's some of that to come. And, you know, always there's going to be a running back or two or three who's going to be available. Sort of the way Johnson was last year, you know, post-draft, there will be one or two or three guys available who I think are going to be able to help teams. And then it's just, how do we budget them? How much do we offer them? And are we going to be the high bidder among the relatively low bidders trying to get this guy for 35 cents on the dollar?
Sure. It's kind of like Zach Mettenberger being let go by the Titans. That type of situation, right?
Yeah.
Good stuff there. Peter, as always, we appreciate your time. Stay well. Thank you.
Hey, thanks a lot, Brad. Take care.
It's Peter King with us, the Monday Morning Quarterback, SI.com, senior NFL writer. Always good to catch up with Peter, a weekly staple during the regular season with us here on Sports360AZ.com. The Diamondbacks have the Yankees tonight with Robbie Ray on the mound. Tonight is game one of OKC and Golden State, so I'm going to have a busy night watching stuff. We'll see what the suspensions come down in the Texas-Toronto game and the brawl on that front. Thanks for being with us.